Hey friends, welcome to the Thrive Like a Parent podcast. You know those parents who look like they've got it all together? Yep, that's not me. I'm Dr. Brooke Weinstein, mom, widow, and neuroscience expert on all things sensory and emotional regulation. Yep, that's right. I'm here to get down and dirty on the truth behind parenting, education, burnout, neuroscience, widowhood, and the shit show we call life. So come join me for conversations with thought leaders, doctors, and women just like you who aren't afraid to speak the truth and help you find that silver lining between the to-do lists, shit shows, and chaos of parenthood. If you are craving the answers to finally find that sweet spot between chaos and calm, pull up a seat and listen in as I take you from burnt out and surviving to finally thriving. Well, I am so excited, and I should first say hello and welcome to another episode of Thrive Like a Parent podcast. You and I, Dr. Shefali, have already kind of gotten going and started talking, but for those of you who don't know who Dr. Shefali is, I want to introduce you to her. I'm so beyond honored to have her here and talking with myself and allowing all of you to get an inside glimpse into her brain and her expertise. And Dr. Shefali has written multiple New York Times bestsellers. She's received her PhD in clinical psychology, and she is absolutely a wisdom teacher who integrates Eastern spirituality with Western psychology. And she's an expert in family dynamics and relationships. And Dr. Shefali, thank you so much for being here and welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. You know, you some people, you meet them and they just have such a warm presence. And I want all your listeners to know that that's who you are. And I don't say this, you can hear me in other podcasts. Not that other people are not lovely, but you have a very particular warmth and simple kind of presence to you. And I just want your listeners to know that I'm getting to experience that right now.
Thank you, Dr. Shefali. I very, very much appreciate that. I was sharing with you before we started that one of my all-time favorite books, and if you don't have this book, you need to go get it, which is one of Dr. Shefali's books. It's called A Radical Awakening. And I'll hold it up for any of you watching this on YouTube eventually, but I have highlighted and written notes, and I have like an entire thing of post-it notes here. And it's literally as if it was something that I was at school, you know, like a textbook reading, and not just like a listening, enjoying reading book. And that's because your word spoke so true to me. And I think one of the biggest things that I took away from your book, that specific book, Dr. Shefali, is authenticity and owning who we are. And there's this specific quote that I love. It's, when we allow toxicity to exist for the sake of peace, we are actually perpetuating war. There is no real peace where there is no authenticity. Lasting peace only emerges from an honest acceptance of oneself and one's life experiences. And I was sharing with you my life's journey as and what I've been through. And that quote, I believe, is so important for... there are men and women who listen to this podcast, but I believe specifically for women and owning all the parts of themselves, and as well as men too, and that mask that we perpetuate and place on ourselves. And you did such a beautiful, beautiful job of expressing that. And I love that book and that quote. And I would love for you to tell me a little bit about what this book for you personally meant to you as you were writing it, because I know it was more of a personal journey for you.
Yeah, the book, although it emerged from my own personal huge journey post my divorce, it was really my decision to offer the jewels of what I had learned to other women. Because, you know, just like I did with conscious parenting, once I realized, you know, holy cow, I missed this whole like wisdom, and I've messed up my, you know, and I say this with compassion, messed up my parenting. And I wanted to share what those jewels were, in the same way I wrote this book, really to share, because I realized, well, if I'm going through this, you know, look how many others are going through it with far less resources or insight or awareness. And, you know, I always believe that we can create art out of our pain. And that's what I'm really good at doing. And so, and service, art and service,
That's
right?
true.
Or art in service, for service. So that's what I did. I wrote this book to be a real beacon of light for other men and women who are going through a journey from inauthenticity to authenticity. You know, none of us have held on to our authenticity. We've all had to reclaim it. And the good thing about life is that it knocks you down enough where you then begin to have a choice whether to keep sticking, you know, in the swamp or rise to a more authentic self. And you can choose at every stage whether to rise or not. And like you said in that quote, you know, toxic, inauthenticity is never peace, right? Just because you're keeping the calm in a house, but if you're inauthentic, that's never going to bring about peace. Only authenticity will drive that. But to be authentic, you have to piss people off, or people will get pissed off, and you have to leave the crowd and dare to be alone and kind of suffer in that solitude, and then realize that you have resources and you are actually complete and okay. Wow, what liberation that is when you realize, you know, it hurts, but I'm okay. And that's what that book is about. It's about men and women who are going through a really difficult journey to realize you can be in pain, but you can still be majestic and empowered and full and whole and actually all the more powerful because of that pain.
Yeah, I love that you said that you almost have to be alone and sit with it to then move to the next phase or to be empowered. And I do believe that when you move through anything that happens in your life, there is a sense of isolation or loneliness or longing to feel, I almost want to like put quotes, like longing to feel normal, but you know, and you can't ignore the feelings that you're having. And so abandoning those feelings is such a loss of self-control even and identity, and leaning into those feelings allows you to have such immense amount of emotional power, if you will, eventually to be able to say, I did that. I moved through that. And the strength that it requires is, it's not an easy one. It's not an easy journey, but I do believe that there's two paths when you're moving through something, and it's either we face it head on and we lean in and we learn from the experience, or we jump ship, abandon, put it on a shelf and ignore, but it eventually comes back. It'll show up. And you do such a beautiful job of, I love that you said that pain can turn into art and lessons, right? And it's very, very true. If you've moved through something, other people have moved through it too. And you did such a beautiful job of expressing that and allowing others to really know they're not alone and to own their voice and to be okay with the challenges and obstacles in life. And then go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, because like you're saying, you know, we have choices for a reason, because, you know, at the end of the day, there is not, you know, an endless amount of time. And so we have to choose, okay, everybody's life has pain. There is not a single human I've met who doesn't have pain. In fact, most people may have more pain than you've ever even imagined. So given that everybody has pain and given that life is messy and there is no such thing called perfection, now, given that you're just going to have to deal with the crap, do you want to deal with it head on and say to it, you know, bring it on. I will deal with you. I will metabolize you because I honor you and myself so much that I'm going to marry you. I'm going to integrate you. Or am I going to disconnect from it and run away from it, right? It's, do I want to experience my life with all its pain and glory, or do I not? And what does it mean to experience a life? Means to taste it and to feel the pangs and the shards of the broken glass that life eventually throws at you, or to just wait for the good times and the velvet plush cushions. Well, then you keep waiting, right? But what if you could have the cushions and the velvet and the roses and transform the glass into such exquisite bouquets that now you're a win-win no matter what, you
Yeah.
know? But we're taught to run away from pain, and that's the problem, right? So because we've been taught to run away from pain, and because life has so much pain, most of us are running away 50 or 70% of the time, and then it's too late. And there is such a thing as terminality. We will die. So it's not about living in scarcity, but in living with the acute awareness that we don't have time to keep running away. At some point, we have to learn the skills to embrace something that is a constant in life, which is pain. Pain is a constant. It's going to come. Within this decade or the next, it's coming. So, do we want to prepare ourselves to learn how to alchemize it, or do we want to keep pretending as if it's, you know, we are better than the pain, or we should be luckier than others? You know, I've never met a totally lucky person yet who hasn't, you know, dealt with pain. So there's no such thing. So the sooner we learn to embrace it, you know, you've had your trauma, I've had mine, but what do we do with the trauma? That's what differentiates a life well lived or a life if avoided, you know.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think we often are looking for like the Disneyland story ending. We are often Cinderella, you know what I mean? Like we're often looking for, well, where's that ending? Where, like the rom-com. But if we decide that that's a rom-com and not reality, we can find joy and inner peace and clarity in the pain and acceptance of that pain and knowing that this is part of the journey. And what that also allows you to do, I feel, is to be able to then find the winds, to find the breath of fresh air in the storm or continue dancing through the storm, right? Even. And to be able to really accept the wholeness of a human journey and the life that is created. And pain can't stop. There will always be something that goes wrong in our lives, or there's, you know, the saying, there's always something, right? There is always something. And so if we accept that and we lean in and we embrace it, there is room for celebration in feelings and emotion and even pain. There really is. And you can allow that if you open your mind to it, if you will, and you give yourself that permission, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I often tell parents and you know, my adult clients that if you have a hand, this thumb, which is so crucial, is the hard stuff, and it's always walking with the other stuff, which is love and work and passion and family. Yes, that's all there, but if you're not going to have this one, which is the pain of life, and allow it to work together, you're literally disabled because you're cutting off a vital part of life's experience and cutting yourself off from experiencing it. Therefore, you're avoiding big chunks of your life. And many people are living like that, dissociated, you know, addicted to soothe them from the pain of having to deal with that because as children, they did not learn, right? So it's too scary for them. It's not their fault. But at some point, we have to wake up and live it differently, live life differently than our parents taught us to live.
1,000%. And I think that's a really great transition into talking about your current book, which is The Parenting Map. And I believe that you talk about that a lot. And you talk about how, you know, we have these prescriptions or we build this like scenario. And the specific quote I love was, "Parenting unknowingly writes scripts and creates films for their children, protecting a vision of perfection and happiness and great success." And I love how you were explaining that in a sense of we build that, we create that almost because it's right, that fairy tale ending that we're wanting, or that life that we think does exist. And so we prescribe it even if we don't have it. It's like, well, then our children will get it, or they must have that. And you do such an awesome job of explaining there is no perfect parenting. No one gives you a guide for this. And I would love for you to explain a little bit to our listeners, like, what would you say is behind this need for perfection from our children and for our children?
Well, what's behind it is an utter sense of lack and unworthiness and insecurity and crippling doubt. And a life that has been lived predicated on external validation. And our parents taught us that. Children don't come externally seeking to the degree that we are. They come looking for worth from their parents, but they also feel a sense of wholeness and completeness on their own until we begin to train them to, you know, get the grades and look a certain way and achieve. And then we give the validation. And so then they begin to equate all those external markers for that, you know, sense of worth, instead of being told there's nothing you need to do to impress me. You don't need to become anybody except who you are, and who you are is good enough. You know, instead, children are raised to do more and be more and shamed for being, you know, average or ordinary. And well, there you go. So then we think that, you know, we have to be this ideal standard, this perfect person. Then when you have children who are very hard to control, we impose those same feelings of lack and unworthiness onto our parenting and now ride our children like we tried to ride ourselves. Not that we were successful, but because, in fact, the more we were not successful in riding ourselves to superstardom, that's the parent who rides their children. You know, that parent thinks to themselves, you know, I couldn't do it, and I'm going to now do it through my children.
Right.
And we use our children to fulfill all the inner void and all the inner expectations that we couldn't fulfill for ourselves. You know, when somebody fulfills their own expectations for themselves, they won't project this onto others because they've lived a full life. They don't need the other to define them, complete them, you know, actualize for them. They are okay with their children being ordinary because they have created their own sense of worth. It's those parents who are hungry, who have been taught to look for it through the zip code or the mansions or the boats, and they really think that worth comes from those things. Those parents are the scary ones who then push their children to create that sense of, you know, unworthiness and validation from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you say to just allow them to be ordinary. And I think that some would listen to that and say that, like, that's defeat or the word ordinary, but it's really truly when you're saying ordinary, it's actually extraordinary, but in their own way. You know what I mean? It's
yes,
allowing them to be ordinary because of just allowing them to simply be absolutely who they are and allow them to be the extraordinary person that they are, but in the way that they were meant to be that, rather than us prescribing it to them, us saying, hey, yes, you should go be a this or a that because that's what I believe for you, or that's the journey that we feel will make them, quote, successful, or even well, this is who I built. This is who I delivered to the world. This is who I helped raise. This is who I prescribed. You know, it's almost a win for us, if you will, to be able to have them go to whatever heights we believe our own mind, right? In our own mind, our own story that they should be able to reach. And your two books very much go hand in hand in terms of being like, you give the specific guidelines of like how to do this in the parenting map, especially when it relates to parents. And then in A Radical Awakening, you really express the process of if you took the parenting map and you did the tools and steps that you gave, the Radical Awakening it's the process, it's the journey, it's the solution of what the map would give you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I love that.
Right?
Right. Or another way to put it is that my book, A Radical Awakening, is really for the awakening of the parent and really coming into their own power so they don't use their children to fulfill their inner longings. And then the parenting map is how to do it right for your children.
Yes.
But I really believe that both do go hand in hand, and I appreciate your saying that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want you to talk a little bit about the ego. And I love these five parenting ego categories. I think you did such a great job of explaining this. And I think that there could be so many aha moments for parents. And I love that you talked, of course, about, because I'm all about the nervous system, so fight, flight, or freeze, but you talk about these in a different way. So if you could Explain the five for our listeners. I would love that.
So whenever we're caught in a moment of chaos with another human being, but let's say just our children, because that's what I was talking about in this book, but it could relate to anybody.
Absolutely.
So when we're caught in a moment of chaos with somebody, our children, the first thing we feel, as we should, we're primed to feel panic, right? Anxiety. We need to act. And, but we're not any longer in the savannah, you know, killing wild boar and fighting tigers. So now we are in a more psychological jungle, and we feel we have to survive in the psychological jungle.
So true.
we put on a survival mask of the ego. So the ego is a mask that we put on to kill the tiger, right? But here it's a perceived tiger. It's a psychological tiger. It's a shield of protection, which actually may not even need to be there. You know, it's something that we've created in our mind. So I talk about the five ego masks of the fighter, the typical fighter parent who screams, yells, explodes. Then there's the fixer parent, the empath who rushes in to rescue and save and fix it all, but is a little bit of a victim and creates a codependency and loses themselves in their children and raises children to not really feel powerful, right? Actually, fixers, although they are lovely people, they're also highly toxic, because they won't allow the children to fly free, to grow up, to be independent. They cling to the fixer, or they cling to the child by fixing them. Mm-hmm. Although they will be very indignant if you tell them that they're not caring, because they actually show up with a lot of care, but it's all directed to protect their own fear that their child will fly the coop, right? Mm-hmm. Then there is the feigner parent, F-E-I-G-N-E-R, who fakes it, right? The parent who is simply using the children as their trophies, their medals, yeah, their gold stars on Facebook to show off to the world. Look, mommy, I finally, you know, made it. My kid is not a loser. And then we have the two more trauma-based ego masks, the freezer and the fleer. You know, we've all frozen. We've all run away. Well, that is a parent who does that more chronically, and then creates its own level of dysfunction with the children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we wear these masks to protect us from confronting, you know, some sort of psychological pain. It feels too unbearable. And then we create this shield. Instead of dealing with the pain and soothing our own inner needs, we then react to our children in a particular way from that pain. And we think we are responding to our children, but no, we're not. We're responding to the needs of our own inner child. And we don't even realize it.
Yep.
And so we say, oh, my kid was on the screen and they don't realize that they can, you know, fry their brain. I was just yelling at them to protect them. No, you were yelling at them to protect yourself. Sure, your kid may still need to be stopped, but you didn't have to yell at them.
Right.
You lost control because you were so anxious from inside.
Yep.
And that's a bitter, you know, pill for people to swallow, but that's the truth. And in order to raise connected children, you have to really honor what's going on inside you, like you teach, and understand it both on a physiological but also a psychological level. And really work to soothe that inner parent,
yeah,
very assiduously, very deliberately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to say it's the power of the pause, which is, it is a practice, right? Rather than snapping at our kids when they're, you know, throwing toys everywhere and you're ready for them to go to bed and you've had enough after a long day of work and you still got dishes to do. And, you know, it's like, enough, go to bed. Or we can take a pause, breathe, and there's an unmet need there clearly when we're snapping. And it's, how do
yes.
I feel? I feel exhausted. I
yes.
feel tired. I feel broken. I feel burnt out. I feel alone. I'm exhausted and tired, and I need my children to go to bed. And if you I statement rather than you need to put the toys away and you need to go to bed, and I've told you 15 times, shifting from the you to the I allows you to connect with the need, connect with the unmet need, right? Of
yes.
what is going on in our world and internally what's going on. And I believe that parents, it's not just that we have this prescribed notion of where we want them to go in life.
We love our children. We want them to be happy and enjoy their lives. And so then we beat ourselves up when we snap or when we lose mm-hmm. control or when we say something we shouldn't, and then we beat ourselves up and then we rip ourselves to shred. And that's where the shame and guilt comes in. And it's not that we are bad parents. This is really freaking hard. Like, there's no guidelines. There's no book. Of course, we can write books to try and help everyone, but it really is a trial and error and a touch and go process. And if you are abandoning self, you will continue snapping. You will continue looking at your children and getting frustrated or wearing the masks or the ego and not focusing in on self. And it really is, you know, for over a decade, I worked with children and I was like, this isn't working, because it does start with parents. It does start mm-hmm. with us internally looking at ourself and doing the work on ourself. And you said it so wonderfully. You said, it's not the idea of parenting rather than childing, right? It's like parenting is really parenting ourselves. And if we mm-hmm. weren't doing that process, we would be childing them, right? We would be teaching them or teaching a child. And I thought that was right. So well put.
Yeah. I think parents think that it's so child focused and, you know, even so many people out there are helping parents to deal with the child. And there's a place for that. But until you deal with the parent and the child that's in the parent, the children are good. Children are amazing. You know, they will find their way. Of course, if some of the children have a real physical disability, then you need to help them. But emotionally, they will be okay if we don't go out of our way to mess them up. Mm-hmm. So, and the reason we go out of our way is not because we're evil. It's because our unconscious takes us off the path, mm-hmm. takes us so off, because we've been coming from legacies of so much pain over generations and no one took the time to stop the pattern. But until you do that, you can teach the parent 1,000 good things to say. Say this, say that, say this. Next time, do this, do that, do that. It doesn't matter, because it's in between the moments of ordinary living that the child picks up their whole philosophy of life. Yes. It's not in what I say when the child is acting out. It's not what I do when the child is disrespectful. It's how am I embodying on a daily level in terms of how I live my life? Mm-hmm. How do I wait in the parking lot for a parking space to open up? How do I stand in line at the grocery store? Mm-hmm. How do I run out in the rain or, you know, deal with a train delay? That's what it's about. It's not about what I do with my kid when my kid is disrespectful. That's important to know, yes. But it's really a whole philosophy. And that's what I teach. It's your whole paradigm of how you live your life. You are that paragon of living. You're not a paragon of just, you know, correcting, right, which is what most of us are trying to do with our children, just correct them. And that's not parenting. Parenting is really you parenting yourself to such a degree that you're living in the most actualized, joyful way possible. And then your children go, wow, she loves life. She's always picking herself up. I guess life is cool. Life is fun. Let's have some fun at this thing called life. If we're not having fun, if we're not loving life, if we're not laughing at ourselves and life, well, then that's what our children are going to pick up, that life is tough, like life is difficult. Is it difficult? Sure, but we make it a lot more difficult.
Yeah, I love that, because you have to be able to make, in order to make a limbic attachment like within your brain and in order for it to really connect the dots, you have to do these practices in everyday life, especially like you're saying, these examples. When you just gave examples, you didn't give any examples of when you're frustrated that your kid is screaming in the car and you're hot because it's summertime and you're trying to get all three kids into a stroller. And that's when we need to take, like, you're giving examples outside of parenting moments to really adapt and adopt these principles for yourself, because that is how it will end up showing up when your child's melting down in the middle of Target because they want, you know, a teddy bear or whatever it is. That if we adopt these principles outside of the chaotic moment, if we use this philosophy within our everyday existence and our everyday life, it will end up translating into that. And children are, they are going to learn. They are like, they're every day, they're a day older, right? And I love how you talked about releasing them, right? Like releasing them into, if you will, the wild. And you talk about releasing them, you know, in their teens. And I've always told clients that it's really, our children would not survive without us when they were first born. They need to be changed. They need to be fed. And they cannot do those things on their own. And so a codependent relationship does exist naturally, immediately when they are first born. And it's needed. But I believe that the work of our lives as parents is to slowly release, very slowly release that codependency and allow them to spread their wings and fly. And that is the work for us to do. And it doesn't happen overnight, because that attachment happened very fast and was necessary for our children when they were first born. But to be able to release that slowly over time will allow both parties, parent and child, to be able to have a whole life and a whole authentic, beautiful life of what is prescribed for you as an individual, rather than continuing to be enmeshed and continuing to walk the line together. You know, if you put all of your eggs in one basket, oftentimes I have clients who are like, I'm like, what do you need? What do you want to do? What do you need? They have no idea what they need. They have no hobbies. They have no anything, because we've put all of our eggs in one basket and it becomes our center of our world. And I believe.
Yeah, but that parent who doesn't know really was raised to be a sheep in the herd.
Yes.
They were raised by parents who didn't honor them. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I'm with an adult client who's confused and disorganized, and I give them strategies and I teach them how to be organized, but I'm always aware that as a child, they weren't trusted to follow their own way and they didn't back themselves up. So they've never trusted themselves. That's why they keep flip-flopping and, you know, going all over the place, and it can drive a therapist crazy. But we have to have compassion that that person was never trained to follow themselves. From a young age, they were told what to do. They were yelled at if they, exerted their own dominance, and they were suppressed. Mm-hmm. So now they've suppressed their inner knowing. So to kindle that inner knowing now takes a lot of gentle care and patience and a long time.
Yeah, it's giving your child autonomy and it's giving your child a voice. I think that we, you know, I use this example all the time of like, your child comes home and they say, Johnny, you know, didn't sit by me at lunch today. What is our natural response, right? The fixer of like, oh, it's fine. We didn't like Johnny anyway. Go sit next to Sarah tomorrow. Like, we really like Sarah, right? That's fixing, as opposed to being like, well, how did that make you feel, right? Mm-hmm. Giving them a voice. When we snap at our kids saying, hey, and when we go to repair, hey, how'd that make you feel when mommy snapped at you, right? Mm-hmm. Giving them a voice, allowing them to own it from a very early age, and knowing that rather than us just saying, I'm so sorry, you know, daddy shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have snapped at you. I'm so sorry. You know, that was wrong of mommy. Whatever it is, we can say, how did that make you feel? Like, what do you need? How can I support you?
Yeah, but that means then when we do get an answer that, you know, you were mean, mommy, or you're always on your phone and you don't remember what's important to me, that takes a lot of high emotional intelligence to be able to withstand that criticism. But if a parent has been so shamed by their own parents and now they're being, you know, bombarded by their child, they're not going to hear it as a plea from the child. They're going to hear it as a scolding from their parent. You know,
That's a hard one. It takes a lot of strength and courage. It does take courage. It takes courage to hear criticism from children and be able to say, wow, thank you for sharing. Like, wow, I needed to hear that. Wow, I'm going to take that in, rather than, oh, but this is the reason why. You know, it's so true. It takes a lot of, work and effort. It really does. It really does.
Right, right. And so then we want our children to know who it is they are, but part of them knowing who it is they are is to defy us. So then it's a catch-22. Do you want your kid to know who they are, or you want to have a compliant child? Which one is it? Because they both, you know, cannot occur. If you want them to know who they are, you cannot have a compliant child. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go together. So mm-hmm. this is where parents go, I don't know. I don't know. Forget it. They'll figure out who they are after they leave me. Let them just be That's compliant true. Right now.
Okay. So speaking of compliant child, I love your portion of the book that talks about consequences, right? And I love that you talk about connecting before correction, right? And then you move into negotiation, boundaries, and consequences. And I think that you do, again, an awesome job of explaining that connecting with a child before correcting and explaining that, you know, they are going to have natural consequences on their own and all the different things. But I wanted to talk to you and really hear your opinion or your thoughts on there are so many books that discuss parenting, right? There's so many books, but some parents have highly sensitive children. Some parents have children who are highly active. We could even say some children have a diagnosis, right? Or ADHD or sensory processing disorder or things like that, extenuating circumstances where their child is high needs. Maybe they're just a seeker and they're bouncing off the wall and they're jumping from task to task to task, or they're having a hard time sitting at school and school is demanding of them to sit in the chair. I would love to hear from you how to incorporate this knowledge and everything that you map out in the book. How do we do that? Or how would you recommend doing that for a parent who is in that situation?
Yeah, it's actually particularly good for parents in those situations where they're constantly feeling like they're in a landmine, things are blowing up all the time. They need extra resources and internal, you know, sturdiness to withstand the constant turmoil. And it's because their children are highly sensitive and picking up on all their baggage that parent needs to be even more in charge of their internal world, more connected to their own inner baggage so that they don't, you know, let the bags open up and all the, you know, belongings just vomit onto the other people. It's like holding your suitcase firmly in your own hand and parking it in the right place and opening it when you need to open it. And this work is even more imperative for that kind of parent with that kind of child. Mm-hmm. And actually, in my practice, those are the parents who do come to me much quicker, much earlier, because they are being tested way sooner mm-hmm. than the so-called, you know, parent of the good kid or parent of the successful kid. That parent will come too, but they'll come much later. Mm-hmm. So typically my practice is filled with parents who are faced with very challenging children children that are challenging to them. Let me say it that way. Then the children in and of themselves may not be challenging at all, sure. But the parents are very challenged. So this work is so important and valuable. And I give this anchor that they can rest on in their moments of storm. You know, you need an anchor, a way of thinking. And I, in this book, The Parenting Map, I've laid out these 20 steps. Keep coming back to them. They will not betray you. Do the work and you will have much better connection with your children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not without effort either, right? Like we were talking about supporting ourselves and leaning into ourselves as a parent, but it's not without effort to support a child who is highly sensitive or to support a child who maybe doesn't even want to share their feelings or who pushes away the connection. Some kids even push that away, and it does still require a lot of internal process for ourselves and to be able to lean in when, let's say, our methods aren't working, or when we're discouraged by a child, or when we're exhausted from the child.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. But see, connection isn't, you know, you said sometimes a child doesn't want to connect. Connection isn't about touching, hugging, kissing. the connection is connecting to what my child needs right now.
Yes.
So if my child needs space, my child needs space. Mm-hmm. And that's not, and meeting that need is connection.
Mm-hmm.
So when my child became a teenager and she went through that phase where she didn't want to talk, like, and when every time I breathe, it was like a nuisance for her. I could take it personally, or I could understand, oh, let me connect to her need. Her need right now is for me to kind of back off and disappear. I'm meeting that need.
Yep.
And I used to give myself a pat on the back every time I met the need successfully, because I actually wanted to talk a lot and bother her. And so when I, but it looked different. It looked like we weren't talking, but it was actually me picking up from her that she needed her space.
Yes.
Until she was ready to talk. So connection, people think it's about closeness in terms of touchy-feely, coochie-cooing. No, that's not connection. Connection is, what does my child need from you, from me, on a physical, psychological, emotional level? Can I meet that need?
Yeah, and honoring it, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, 1,000%. Dr. Shivali, I can't thank you enough for having this conversation with me and kind of going down the rabbit hole. I really, really believe that this will help so, so many of the people who listen to this and a lot of my clients. And I can't thank you enough for your work. I think it's fantastic in the way that you express it and express it in written form as well as verbally here. But I am so, so honored again that you're here, and I really can't thank you enough. I would love for you to tell everyone about what's coming up for you. Of course, I've talked about both of your books, and we will link everything here. And I'm sure you can find Dr. Shivali on all the social media platforms, but I'd love for you to share a little bit about what's coming down the pipeline for you.
Yeah. So I do have a coaching institute, which is amazing, where I coach people to do the work I do. So if people are interested, it's a 5-month online global program. It's only twice a year. I'm very hands-on in it, and I really train a super level of coaches. Mm-hmm. And then my new podcast, Parenting and You, which is based on live interventions that I do with parents in real time, is also out. And I'd love parents to go listen to it and share. It's really spontaneous. It's unscripted. It's all me, no expert guests, talking to parents and just kind of figuring out their struggles. I do 2 guests every episode. So each one is just 15, 20 minutes where I give a pathway forward and really teach the parent how to grow up, really. And so I hope your listeners will go and explore that.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to listen to that. I am so excited to go. I'm going to go do it right now. I'm going to go actually listen to it right after this.
Thank you so much, Brooke. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And go check Dr. Shivali out and grab her new book, as well as go listen to her new podcast. And until next time, XOXO, Dr. V.